Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. I'm DJ Short, and with me here once again is Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. Thanks to those of you joining us on Twitch this afternoon, and for those of you listening in podcast form or watching later on YouTube, we're recording on Wednesday afternoon, which means it's time for another Waiver Wire Wednesday episode. Lots of prospects coming up right now, which is a lot of fun. Add some juice to the waiver wire right now. We'll get into all that. Scott, how's it going?
Going great, man. Yeah, we're almost to the halfway point of the season. And this used to be the prime prospect season when everybody would hold their prospects back. Now we've gotten away from that in the last few years with some rule changes, and some teams have different approaches now, so we don't have to wait as long. But there's always a pipeline of young talent coming in, and of course the usual stuff: guys are getting hurt, closer situations are flipping, you know, lineups are changing, guys are moving up, guys are moving down. So hopefully we can give your fantasy roster, you know, the fresh coat of paint it might need.
Yeah, Luis Matos with the Giants has been a fun pickup over the past week. We'll see how sustainable it is. I think speed wise he's going to be really useful. I think looking at his roster tag on Yahoo right now, it looks about where it should be. So I could have easily talked about him in this episode, but I think he's scooped up where he should right now. I used a lot of my fab on Matos in my NL-only labor league over the weekend. I'm hoping to get some kind of boost because my offense is terrible. We'll see. He looks exciting. He could play center field too. It's a big key. Could keep him on the field amid the initial struggles. But we have a lot more prospect stuff to get into today. So excited to get started. But Scott, you are on the clock this week.
That's right.
So you gave me some names you plan to talk about, and I'm going to grab one from here and set you loose. So make the case for a pitcher we were high on going into spring training this year, Reed Detmers with the Angels. Let's hear your take.
Sure. Yeah, well, Reed Detmers last year was a very playable fantasy pitcher. 3.77 ERA, 1.21 whip. I think he's going to percolate back to that level. He struck out 8 guys in his last 3 starts. He went toe-to-toe with Clayton Kershaw in a really good game Tuesday night. And Detmers is not that far removed from a 12-strikeout game against Minnesota in May. I don't understand why his roster tag is about 1/3 in Yahoo right now. I'm having trouble finding pitching, and I think Detmers profiles as somebody who should have an ERA under 4. It's not under 4 right now. It's 4.02, and I think the fact that he only has 1 win in 13 games is maybe pushing some people off the scent. He's a good pitcher. Now, look, we know fewer wins get slotted into a starting pitching right now. A lot of it is going into relief, so you take the wins where you can get them, but he's going to give you good ratios. And anybody who has 84 strikeouts and 69 innings with decent control, I mean, that guy's rosterable to me. I think I initially was shocked he was available for the segment.
Yeah, not the start that a lot of people thought to his season, but the second half last year, he was so good just in terms of getting the swings and misses, and he took a real step forward. So he was a name I was high on going into the spring. I still think there's a chance that he could end up that way. I know the Angels rotation's a little different because of the Ohtani factor. So cumulative, what you're going to get over the course of the season might be a little bit less with Angels starters just because of Ohtani's schedule. But I do like Detmers going forward as well if he's out there in your league. Before we move on here, just a quick reminder, download the RotoWorld app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today. So I'm going to start out with my recommendations here, talking about a veteran. I know we're going to get into some rookies here pretty quickly, but for me, Tommy Pham, rostered in just 9% of Yahoo leagues, which is pretty shocking to me, given how good he's been for the better part of the past 3 weeks. He's hitting .345 with 4 home runs, 7 doubles, 1 triple, 18 RBIs, 3 steals, 12 runs scored over his last 17 games, just filling up the box score entirely. He's batted 5th in 3 straight games, regular at bats between left field and the DH spot. The Mets need his bat right now, which is kind of sad to say that he's that critical to their lineup right now, but he really is. Given the struggles the Mets have had, they just can't get out of their own way recently. Pham had double-digit homers and steals as recently as 2021, so he brings that pop and speed to the table. He hits the ball hard. If you go to his Baseball Savant page, you'll see some nice red in there. So given the situation, as long as he's hitting like he's hitting, he's going to be in there every day, right in the middle of the lineup. Alonso's back. Lindor's there, even though he's struggled a bit, but chance to drive in some runs in a lineup which should be better than it has been until this point. I don't see any reason why he's at 9%.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, he played really well when injuries forced him into the lineup, and now that the lineup is healthier, but he's been too good to displace. OPS plus of 125. He's slugging .490, as you mentioned, the power and speed combination. And I'm going to fold the Pham recommendation into the next player I recommend, a kind of a guy out of nowhere. You know, Pham, you know, mid-30s. Just somebody's producing, just go with it. And I'm just going to go with it with Julio Teheran. I actually picked him up a week or two ago in a couple of leagues. And look, I get it. He's been basically out of baseball for a couple of years. He just had that one appearance with Detroit in 2021. He had a couple of starts with the Angels in 2020. It looked like his career was over. 5 starts. The last 4 have been quality starts. All of them have been good. And look, he's going to be a guy that the luck metrics are going to flash because the 1.78 ERA, it's not sustainable for anybody, certainly not for somebody like Julio Teheran who pitches as much contact as he does. But his FIP is still in the mid-3s. He's got 4 walks against 20 strikeouts. That ratio is always going to play, even if it's not the strikeout rate we want. He's so excellent with the control. Yeah, eventually the BABIP's going to normalize, but until he has 2 bad starts in a row, I've had trouble finding pitching. Again, I was so glad that I could see Detmers available in some of my leagues. I moved quickly on them. I added Teheran already in some leagues, 15-teamers, where I'm struggling to find anything playable. Until he does me wrong, Julio Teheran's in my lineup, man.
Yeah, and at this point, I've found that I'm looking very critically at matchups because I think we're at the time of the year where you could start to see the weak links offensively. As far as teams, so I target those teams, you know, target the A's, the Pirates have struggled recently. I mean, look for the matchups where you can try to take advantage. So even if you don't have like the reliable back end type of fantasy starters, those moves around the margins can make a big difference.
And
sure.
Teheran tied to the NL Central. We know the divisional play isn't as big of a bite of the apple as it used to be.
Yeah,
but we've been talking all year about how, you know, nobody wants to win the NL Central. The AL Central is a weak team, weak group of teams offensively. It's just living in Detroit, man. It is hard. I'm making plans to go to a baseball game with a friend of mine. And the whole key is to try to find a good opposing team because there's like almost nothing on the Tigers you want to watch. I say that very sadly. Maybe Spencer Torkelson will turn it on at some point. You know, Zach McKinstry had like 2 or 3 weeks of real fun value, and then he's kind of cratered since then. But you're right. Yeah, matchup. Teheran's matchup driven for sure. I'm not going to pitch him in Coors Field. I'm not going to pitch him against the better. Well, he goes against the Dodgers. I'll probably skip that one. His next starts against Arizona. So that's dealer's choice to you. If you want to skip that surprising Arizona lineup, what a fun story that is. I understand it. But against pretty much anybody in the NL Central, Julio Teheran, I'm using him.
So the team with the worst record in the National League is the Nationals at the moment.
Yep.
Rockies, second worst record. Third worst record. Who do you think it is off the top of your head? National League third worst record. So Nationals, Rockies. So who's next?
Cardinals.
It is the Cardinals. Isn't that amazing?
Well, I'm going to recommend two Cardinals today. So they're on the way up.
I mean, the thing is, like, their run differential isn't bad. Like, they've just – they should be better than they've been. We all know that. I mean, the Mets are the same way. Like, with as talented as those teams are, there's no way they should be as bad as they've been. I don't know what it's going to take for the Cardinals. We've talked about this before. Maybe it is a managerial change. We'll see.
It's interesting. I'm on Fangraphs right now, and they're – and you can get different win calculator, you know, percentage to make the playoffs, percentage to win the division. The Brewers are 48% on Fangraphs to win that division. Then the Cardinals are 14%, the Cubs 16%, the Reds 15%. And then you talk about guys coming up. Ellie De La Cruz, thank God I have him on a couple of teams, because I would have so much FOMO if I didn't have any De La Cruz. He's like my favorite guy to watch right now. And then the Pirates are at 5.1%. So the Cardinals are still – punters, even though they're 8 games out, they're in last place in this division. It's interesting that the under the hood stats still say that they're like maybe the second or third choice to win this division.
I mean, the Reds over the weekend, they were +700 to win the division. They're currently in first place. Just over the course of like 2 days, I believe, I didn't check it this morning. I checked it yesterday, they were +450. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's changed since then, but they're starting to pick up some steam there for sure. And they're the kind of team that can make an in-season addition. Like if they trade for a starting pitcher, suddenly that team.
They like, badly need. Yeah. Or maybe Nick Lodolo comes back healthy. At least it's not an arm injury. I know they're talking about August for him. So if they can get 6 weeks of good Lodolo, which obviously we didn't see early in the season, but the pipeline of talent. They just keep adding an impact player, it seems like, every 2 or 3 weeks. And De La Cruz looks special. He looks like he could be a first-round fantasy player. Honestly, DJ, I don't – it's hard to keep your feet on the ground when a prospect comes up and he looks the part that De La Cruz does. He's such a spectacle. He identifies himself. If I took you to a baseball game and you knew nothing about baseball, I said, oh, guess who the hottest prospect is on the Reds? Just pick the guy out. You would point to De La Cruz. He looks like that type of player, and then he runs like that type of player. He has that kind of power. Yep. I think next year this could be like a Julio Rodriguez season where he has a great second half, and then next year maybe he's on magazine covers, maybe he's in the first or second round. I think that's in the range of outcomes for him. And feel free to flame me if he hits a – 3 for 47 stretch. You're like, oh yeah, you're talking about De La Cruz being on the cover of the magazines, be in the first or second round. That's not going to happen. I think it's in the reasonable range of outcomes for him.
I think so as well. I think that there are contact issues to be aware of, but as he gets more experience here, you know, given the home ballpark and the supporting cast that he's likely to have moving forward, very exciting times in Cincinnati. It's cool to see Joey Votto come back this week and immediately contribute on a team on the rise as he plays out kind of the back nine of his career. It's very cool to see.
I wish I had noticed that +700, because that's it. Look, I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but that's an overlay. And as you mentioned,
it's a sprinkle. Go ahead, do it.
The market has already corrected, though. Even +450 looks interesting. What's so special about the Brewers? I just recently did my fantasy power rankings, and I think the Brewers had like two players with OPS pluses over 100, which basically means you're a better than average offensive player. And one of them is Christian Yelich, who's nowhere near his MVP form anymore. I don't know who Corbin Burns is right now.
Yeah.
I don't think the Brewers are anything special. I don't think Andy's teams are anything special. It's just cool that the Reds are on the way up and the Pirates are on the way up. The Cubs have been competitive. The Cardinals, we've been saying all year we're waiting for the Cardinals juju to kick in. And again, I'll recommend a couple Cardinals later. But it's a fun division. It's a flawed division. It's a fun division. They're putting the fun in dysfunctional.
Well, speaking of a team that could use a lift, the Guardians. Yes, so my next recommendation here is Gavin Williams, their top prospect pitcher. He's making his MLB debut against the Athletics on Wednesday night, right? So this could backfire for me immediately recommending him on this podcast. But I would not take the first impression too seriously. I do love the matchup from the jump. I'd probably start him today in any fantasy league if you have him on your team. But even if he struggles a bit in his debut, I wouldn't look into it too much. I mean, this is one of the best prospect pitchers in the game. There's no doubt about that. The velocity that Williams has, 2.39 ERA with 81 strikeouts in 60 innings between double and triple A this year. Lots of movement on his pitches. The breaking pitches get high marks as well. I think the control is the one big question mark. since he was promoted to AAA, 21 walks in 46 innings. So we will see if that will get him into trouble. I think he'll have some ups and downs to be sure. But one thing we know about the Guardians, like, they are so great at developing starting pitching that I have to trust the way that this will go. Of course, losing Tristan McKenzie again, just after he recently came back, and now it seems like it could be a while. Maybe we're looking at a potential Tommy John surgery down the road. We'll see. I don't want to speculate, but it seems like it's headed in that direction, potentially, unfortunately. So they need someone like Williams to step up. Of course, they need to hit too, but Williams is a guy who could join this rotation, and he's just up in the majors for good.
Yeah, and you talked about the schedule. It really lines up nicely. He gets Oakland. What better team to draw than Oakland for his first start? He gets Kansas City, just lost Vinny Pasquantino. That lineup is like two or three guys you have to worry about, and that's it.
Yep.
Kansas City would be his next start. Chicago Cubs would be his next start. And then he's going to miss the Atlanta series again. This is assuming nothing changes, no games are rained out or whatever, assuming Williams pitches well enough to actually stay with the team, which I think he certainly has a good chance to. So getting three good draws off the top and not facing the Braves, that's a soft landing. We're going to go there. And as you said, you follow the teams. You backline bet the teams who seem to know what they're doing with pitching. In Cleveland, they can't hit right now, but, man, it seems like every month they're calling up somebody who's interesting. You know, we've had some fun with Bibee and Logan Allen, and this is a really good rotation. It's scary to think how good it would be if they had a healthy Tristan McKenzie. Sadly, they may not have that this season, which is such a shame because what a fun pitcher he is. So we talked about the Cardinals, last place in the division, but, you know, still some upside here. And when it comes to closers, owning the gig or getting the last save is so much of the thing. And Jordan Hicks just reeled off three saves in a row. And he's a spectacle, man. Fastball, according to Fangraphs, his average fastball is 100.9 miles an hour, which just sounds ridiculous. His whole stat page just looks like made-up stuff. It looks like wiffle ball stuff in the backyard, right? Strikeouts per nine, 14.07. Walks per nine, 6.03. So if you watch this – in fact, I don't think you should watch Jordan Hicks. I think you should pick him up, okay? I don't think you should watch him, especially if you have like a heart condition or something. It's going to drive you crazy because he's probably going to walk a couple of guys. He'll strike out a couple of guys. He may hit somebody, but whatever. You've seen him have runs before. He has a 14-save season as recently as 2019. He did get eight saves last year. And the Cardinals, and this will tie in, I guess I could batch my picks together because Brendan Donovan's my other Cardinal pick. They're just going to go with what's working. And Brendan Donovan's been working lately. He plays five positions in Yahoo. We love that. All the infield spots, also the outfield. And he's become their leadoff hitter. Over the last month, he's hitting .319 with a 12-walk, 12-strikeout ratio. Anytime that ratio is around one, we're talking about a good hitter. I know he's not a ton of category juice. Over a full season, he's probably like a 10 or 12 home run guy. He'll steal a sprinkling of bases. But so long as he has an everyday job, which right now he does, and he's batting at the top of the order, right now he's batting first. He has a good OBP skill. I mean, he gets on base. He does work the count really well. I can't guarantee you Donovan will be playable the full season, but right now – Cardinals going to go with what works. And right now, Jordan Hicks at the end of games is working. Brandon Donovan at the top of the lineup is working. So I've added both of those guys proactively in recent days.
I love that Donovan is just eligible everywhere. He's like the ultimate plug-and-play type of guy. We liked him coming into the year. So I think, especially getting that volume at the top of the lineup, you know, that is hugely valuable. And with Ryan Helsley, you know, on the IL with a forearm strain, who knows how long he'll be gone. And he had some blow-ups even before that. Wasn't looking quite right. Hicks, I saw him against the Mets over the weekend, and he looked really good. I think with the throwing harder than essentially anyone, there are going to be those days where he can't find the plate. Like, that just will happen. But I actually was pretty impressed with what I saw. I know the Cardinals gave him a chance as a starter. Like, that just didn't match with his skill set. So we'll see what he could do here as a closer. I definitely think he should be picked up in all leagues. So a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned stashing Adam Duvall, who got off to an amazing start to the season with the Red Sox. Unfortunately, broke his wrist, missed about 2 months. But he homered yesterday after I had a conversation with him. So we'll play that interview now. And then we'll hop back on the other side for some more waiver wire recommendations.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
First off, Adam, thanks for making the time to join me here. How are you feeling? Of course, you got off to that monster start to the season before the wrist injury, missed 8 weeks. How's the wrist feeling? How are you feeling at the plate?
The wrist is feeling good. I think it's pretty much back to normal, which is a good thing. So I'm not having too much feedback as far as from game to game with it. So that's big. Obviously, having the confidence that that's water under the bridge, and so that I can move forward, is huge. And I feel like I'm taking steps forward as far as getting my timing and the contact point back to where I want it to be. But this game, it's a daily grind. It's always a work in process. But it's great to be back out there with the guys and, having fun again.
Have you dealt with any hand or wrist issues in the past, or is this a new thing for you?
Well, actually, last year I had surgery on the same wrist. So whenever I injured it again this year, it was pretty scary because I didn't know if it was sort of the same thing or if I re-injured, what I had repaired. So, that was really scary for me at the beginning. And it was probably the best case scenario, a broken wrist. As far as the other things that could have happened. So,
right.
I was pretty fortunate.
We often hear people like generalize talking about a wrist issue impacting your power, like in the short term. Do you notice anything like that too? Or is it just kind of getting the timing back after missing so much time?
Yeah. I don't think there's a power issue, with it. I think it's as strong as the other one. So I think it's more so power is about timing and consistently getting the barrel to the ball, I think. And that's, those are mechanical moves. And so just getting that short and sweet swing back and finding that contact point, then you start driving the baseball. If you're too far back or too far forward, you're not going to hit too many home runs. So
right. Right. Well, with interleague play, you've had a chance to play in Fenway Park before, but being exclusively a National League guy prior to this year, what has that transition been like for you in a unique ballpark, both offensively, defensively, and also adjusting to a new league in general?
Yeah. I'll start with the last one, a new league, all new arms, basically. So, seeing guys for the first time is sometimes a challenge. You rely on scouting reports, video for that. And so that can be an adjustment in itself. And then defensively, obviously Fenway is very unique. Lots of walls and triangles and angles. And, so just, I think playing, you really got to play a step ahead in your mind as far as, you know, knowing the speed of the runner, knowing who's on first, who's on second. You know, okay, if the ball hits off this wall, where am I going with it? Kind of playing the game in your head ahead of time is probably more important in Fenway than it is in any other ballpark. So, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of mental preparation with that. And then offensively, you know, it was one of the reasons that I wanted to play here. Obviously, yeah. The Green Monster out in left, I felt like I could take advantage of that. So, you know, I think that was a big appeal for me. So,
of course, I think that would be a lot of fun. With all the rule changes we've seen this season, pitch clock, shift restrictions, bigger bases, pickoff throw limits, what has surprised you the most about the flow of the game being in it?
You know, I like the pace. I really do. You know, at first the pitch clock was tough, just getting used to it and coming back off injury. It's, I'm still getting used to it again. So, but the pace of the game is so much better. You know, it seems like we're not out there as long. We're not on our feet as long. And there's more action. So I think they achieved, really what they were going after. So, I think it was a good move.
Yeah, Sunday night baseball, Red Sox, Yankees, you're used to that kind of game being a slog until 11 o'clock or midnight. So it's probably good for you guys to get to bed early or fly where you need to go for sure.
Yeah, I mean, those night getaway games are tough in itself, especially when they're 4 hours long. So, you know, those being cut down a little bit definitely helps.
Yeah. Well, the big reason you're here today is to talk about insulin affordability, the new Tap the Cap campaign. If you want to tell everyone a little bit about your journey with diabetes.
Yeah. So in 2012, I was diagnosed with type 1. I was going into my high A season then with the San Francisco Giants. And, you know, it was a tough time for me. It was kind of a punch in the face. I'd been pretty sick in the off season. You know, it was one of those things where I was working out, I was losing weight, I didn't feel great, but I didn't really know what was going on. So kind of just kept pushing through it. And then when I got to spring training, eventually found out through some blood work that my blood sugars had been elevated and my A1C was pretty high. So, you know, that was kind of the start to my journey as a type 1 diabetic. And, you know, being over 10 years ago now, I feel like it's important for me to, with the platform that I have, to kind of raise awareness, not only for type 1 diabetes, but for what I'm partnering with Lilly about, which is increasing the information available for people and the affordability of insulin, which can be tough. I've dealt with it personally. You know, and so just kind of increasing the awareness there. And, you know, we're running a campaign right now on Instagram and Facebook. It's called hashtag Tap the Cap. And I think it's important that we kind of get this news out there and kind of spread this news to everyone. And even if you don't have diabetes, I think it's important to, you know, kind of use this as a tool to reach those who do. And you know, that's kind of what's on my heart and what's important to me.
Yeah. And you being a, you know, a professional baseball player, I think that gives hope to people who are diagnosed with that as well. There's this new $35 out of pocket cap for insulin. So definitely go check it out. For everyone that uses the hashtag Tap the Cap, Lilly will make a contribution to American Diabetes Association summer camp. So very cool. You can learn more about this whole campaign. Go to lilly.com/insulin. And Adam, thanks so much for joining me here. This was a thrill, and best of luck this season.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Good stuff there from Adam Duvall. And it was cool to see him homer, right after I talked to him yesterday. It was definitely all me. I made that happen. He'll be right back on track moving forward. He's going to hit 20 homers the rest of the way. No doubt about that.
Well, I think after the work you've done with Adam Duvall, maybe the Mets need to hire you and get their lineup sorted out. But yeah, Adam Duvall, great interview there. And, you know, as a Red Sox fan, man, we need him. And he was looked like he was going to have a monster year. He got off to such a great push in the beginning of the season. He seems to fit the park really well. And just I'm thrilled to see him back. He over a full season, what, he led the National League in RBIs a couple of years ago. I mean, he's somebody who can be like a 35-115 guy in a full season. And certainly you couldn't ask, other than maybe Coors Field, you couldn't ask for. And by the way, Coors Field, have you seen Colorado's lineup? Again, I did the fantasy power rankings. I had Colorado buried in the rankings. They have almost nothing. They have like two guys you can play on offense. We know their pitching is something you can never trust. So what a sad situation with Colorado right now. But the Red Sox, they're probably destined to come in fourth or fifth in a very loaded AL East, but it won't be the fault of the offense, and it certainly won't be the fault of Adam Duvall. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, with Chris Sale, with Tanner Houck, what happened over the weekend with the comebacker. So, you know, the rotation definitely has some weak spots, but the lineup is very pesky, and I expect them to, you know, they'll hang around here, but, you know, it's wild card or bust, you know.
It's going to have to be the offense. I've even been using Connor Wong in some of my two catcher leagues, who's become quasi-playable with a OPS plus, just an eyelash over 100. He's got six home runs, usually bats lower in that lineup. Yoshida has been a pretty good addition for them. And we talked about Duvall, who's obviously a power source and fits that offense well. Rafael Devers, who they were able to keep. Nice to see them keep a guy after they couldn't keep Bogarts. They couldn't keep Mookie Betts, which I think everybody is still kind of sad over. But they're going to be, at the end of the year, they're going to win like 83 games. And they're going to be a really fun 83-79 team. And there's going to be a lot of 11-10, 9-8 keg tappers at Fenway. And so, yeah, we'll certainly take that for fantasy purposes.
All right, what you got next, Scott?
I just went two Cardinals, so I think it's on to you.
Okay, so I'm going to talk Royals here with Samad Taylor. Sure. Was called up over the weekend. Actually had a walk-off hit in his debut against the Angels. The thing to know about Taylor is the speed. This guy in AAA this year had 34 stolen bases. His time in AAA hit .304 with a .409 on base percentage. Was acquired from the Blue Jays in the Whit Merrifield deal last year. And last year he kind of fell off the map, like just didn't play well, dealt with an oblique issue as well. But he's someone who's been on the radar before as a potential dynasty prospect. Now, Taylor is 5'8", 160 pounds. So when you see him, you're like, we're not going to get a lot of pop here. But he qualifies between second base and the outfield. I think the Royals, given where they are, I mean, they're just a terrible team. They need to look to the future and give him as many at-bats as they can. Find out what he is. Maybe in the long term, he is a utility player. But as long as the at-bats are there for Taylor, and again, he is out there, and he's rostered in just 3% of Yahoo leagues right now. So he's basically a free lotto ticket to see where this goes. But the speed, I expect it to play. So if you need that on your roster right now, I know speed's a bit easier to find these days. But if you want to compete in that category in your league, he's someone to pick up right now.
And sometimes a great place to look for speed is a team that doesn't have a lot of power, or a team that maybe is a losing team and they're trying to find something they could sell, right? I mean, look at the leaders to stolen bases. You know, Oakland is third. They're obviously going nowhere. You know, there have been times where I've looked to the Royals for stolen base sources because I think that it's kind of a, you know, you only live once approach to offense. Their OBP is below 300, for crying out loud. So I would think Taylor's going to get the green light. They're trying to sell some excitement there, and he certainly – that's a category. The thing with speed is you're going to look at – this is one of the things you do at this time of year, right, is you look at your standings and you really audit. I just looked at one of my leagues and I saw, okay, if I get a speed guy, I think it's Tout Wars. If I can gain like 8 stolen bases, I gain like 5 or 6 points in the standings.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can I get Estuary Ruiz on my team? Can I pick up a guy like Taylor? It might take just one guy to actually be impactful. And the great thing is if I have a surplus somewhere else, like in Tout Wars, I have a surplus of saves right now, especially if Jordan Hicks is a long-term solution. We don't know if he will be. So maybe I can make a trade that wouldn't even hurt my bullpen to get the speed that I need. So audit those standings. And if you can make trades. It's like when you're a kid, right? I have doubles of this baseball card. You have doubles of this baseball card. I trade my surplus for your surplus. Everybody's happy. You can make those fantasy trades pretty easy. You just get to find a win-win, you know, because people don't like to trade stuff they don't have. People like to trade stuff they have in abundance. It's really simple. It's simple supply and demand. So I think that pickup makes a lot of sense. So I'm about to go on vacation. I'm officially off the clock when this podcast ends. And I talked earlier.
Well deserved.
Thank you. Talked about Adam Duvall. Talked about Fenway Park. And so maybe I was feeling a little bit nostalgic for the Carl Yastrzemski days. I saw the very end of his career. So I'll pick up his grandson in this segment with Mike Yastrzemski. We know the Giants are a platoon-heavy team, but that's not a kill shot for fantasy if you're on the good side of the platoon. You're on the heavy side of the platoon. And when Mike Yastrzemski faces a right-handed pitcher, 271, 352, 514 slash with 7 home runs and 144 at-bats, that plays anywhere. So, okay, some formats, it's not the easiest to roster these type of guys, but in daily formats, in DFS formats, he usually bats fifth when he's in the lineup. I'm not saying he's going to be approved for the shallower leagues. And in the weekly leagues, you have to work the schedule. You need the Giants to be up against the right-handed heavy week. But, hey, it's a right-handed world. Left-handers are the exception to the rule. So Lamont Wade has been really good to us as a platoon guy there. Jock Peterson has come back. He's been really useful. Mike Yastrzemski, if you're in a league that is platoon-friendly, I think his roster tag should be maybe 15-20% higher.
I agree. I mean, the power is very valuable. The Giants are on fire right now, too.
Sure.
One of the hottest teams in baseball. We'll see if they can maintain it, but certainly against right-handed pitching, that's never been a question for Yastrzemski. I think he's a worthy pickup, too. I think last week I mentioned Jock Peterson, but Yastrzemski does fit in that similar mold as far as producing against right-handed pitching. So staying in the NL West, I'm going to recommend Dodgers pitching prospect Emmett Sheehan, who recently made his major league debut through 6 hitless innings, should get at least one more turn. We'll see what happens. The Dodgers will be getting some starters back from the injured list, but this kind of start in his debut, we know how good Bobby Miller's been too. So there might be some numbers games eventually, but I think for the short term, you grab Sheehan and see what happens here. He's rostered in 33%. Of Yahoo leagues at the moment, dominated in the minors, 1.86 ERA, 88 strikeouts at 53 and a third innings in Double A this season. It was reported he was moving up to Triple A, and then the Dodgers were like, you know what? You're skipping Triple A altogether and joining us here, which for the Dodgers, they don't do that very often. If you've watched them in recent years, they really slow play the pitching prospects. Maybe you'll see a spot start here and there, but they tend to be pretty conservative with these pitching prospects, bringing them up. A lot of that's injuries that the Dodgers have had this year. But I think the concern with Sheehan is not the ability and the stuff. Changeup's good, fastball, mid-90s, like all the stuff you want to see, checks the boxes, but just hasn't thrown a lot of innings yet. So how deep is he going to work into games? How many innings will he ultimately throw this season? This is not a long-term play. I don't think you're going to see Sheehan in the Dodgers rotation in August. But for now, you know, upside-wise, I think he can give you a boost the next couple of weeks, and that's kind of what you're looking for.
Right, yes, definitely a short-term answer, but an exciting player. As you mentioned, the debut was great. The minor league stats jump off the page. And you talk about his workload. I mean, you look at his baseball reference page, his heaviest workload with any team going back to age 18 was Boston College. He threw 70, yep. New England flavor to this podcast. He threw 76 and two-thirds innings with the Eagles in 2021. So he hasn't been a heavy workload here. You would think, not surprising, he got pulled with a no-hitter, which is kind of standard baseball these days anyway, but certainly with a prize prospect. But when you just see 88 strikeouts and 53 and a third innings, I know it was Double A, but whatever. Double promotions aren't that uncommon, even if it's something the Dodgers usually don't do, as you mentioned. Sheehan is somebody, and you have to play to your format, right? If you're in a league where you don't have a lot of fab, if you're in a league where you have a limited amount of pickups, maybe you don't make a move with Sheehan. But if you're in a league where you have unlimited pickups, or you know, some formats, it's going to make more sense than other formats. But I saw his Double A numbers and said, yeah, I have to have a share of this guy somewhere.
Insane. My final recommendation is actually in keeping with the New England formula that we've had so far. Sal Frelick, who also went to Boston College. He is a top prospect with the Brewers, was basically a consensus top 30 prospect coming into the year, was ranked number 30 by MLB Pipeline. Didn't make the Brewers out of spring training, kind of got off to a slow start, suffered a torn ligament in his thumb, which required surgery, but recently returned to action at AAA, and he's been tearing the cover off the ball. Average exit velocity north of 100. He hit a homer the other day, 2 multi-hit games in his first 4. Frelick is not going to supply huge power numbers. Like you look at his numbers in the minors, 324 hitter, almost as many walks as he's had strikeouts. So it's just that plus hit tool, very discerning hitter at the plate. I don't know if he's going to be a 20 plus homer guy. He might be like 10 to 15 homer guy, but he profiles as a potential leadoff man who can run. He can definitely run. He gives you that speed at the top of the Brewers lineup. And I think given the way things are going in that Brewers outfield right now, it's been kind of an up and down year for Joey Weimer so far. Christian Yelich not going anywhere, but otherwise there's not a lot to love. Brian Anderson got off to an amazing start this season, but it's been all downhill since the first couple of weeks of the season. I think Frelick's going to be up pretty soon if he could show that health and effectiveness at the plate. So I think he's a worthy stash right now, at least in terms of when you look at the landscape of prospects at this point. Who else is there? Who else is left to be called up? I think he's one of the last names we'll see this year who could come up and prove to be very useful in a mixed league. So I'd take a look at Frelick if you have some open roster spots right now.
Love it. And I love that he went to Boston College because, you know, I grew up in New England. Two of my closest friends, my friend Rod McNeil, I was best man at his wedding, went to BC. My cousin DJ Marasco went to BC. In fact, DJ, I'm going to rattle off my five favorite Boston College athletes of all time. Flutie, Heisman Trophy winner in the 80s. Man, was he fun to watch. David Emma, who was a Hobey Baker Award winner at Boston College, centered the hemline with Steve Hines and Marty McGinnis when the Hobey Baker's the hockey highs. But Dana Barros, who was an unbelievable force of nature for BC basketball. Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, NFL MVP, did matriculate at BC. And Johnny Gaudreau, Johnny Hockey, who NHL superstar, was a BC guy and another Hobey Baker Award winner. So a lot of fun at BC. New England, especially if – I don't know if you're a hockey guy at all, but New England, the Boston area is so great for college hockey. And BC and BU have this unbelievable rivalry. The Beanpot is fantastic. Yep. I went to Providence, who had some great teams when I was there. Maine has had some tremendous teams. The best probably college hockey team of all time was the 92-93 Maine team, which had Jim Montgomery, who's the coach of the Bruins now. It had Paul Kariya. He won the Hobey Baker as a freshman, had 100 points in like 40 games, which is just absurd. So I grew up – When you're a New England man, they put the skates on you pretty much when you're born. Yes. I actually wrote a remembrance for the Boston Bruins hockey announcer, Fred Cusick, who was like a family member to me because we all loved Fred Cusick. We all played street hockey and would talk about Fred Cusick. So it wasn't on the script, and I don't know if I've lost any of our listeners here, but just give me a reason to reminisce about the good times I've had at Boston College down at Chestnut Hill.
That's what we do here. It's fully encouraged. And I'm looking up Boston College athletes right now, and I'll probably continue doing it after the show. Jared Dudley was
– Oh,
was,
love Jared Dudley, yeah. Great player.
Played for Boston College well. Let's see.
Do they have any baseball players other than the guys that we talked about today? I'm trying to think if there's anybody – I can't think of any off the top of my head.
A.J. Dillon went to Boston College.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, Green Bay running back.
All right.
I believe Joe Morgan, Walpole Joe Morgan went to Boston College, who was more known
Michael King, Yankees pitcher, went to Boston College.
Okay, there you go. He's having a nice season.
Justin Dunn on the Reds, who was a former Mets draft pick, didn't turn out the way the Mets had hoped, but that's what I'm seeing so far. Emmett Sheehan, who we talked about.
Yeah, Luke Kuechly, the great linebacker, probably going to the Hall of Fame, was a BC kid.
Chris Shaw had some moments of relevance with the Giants a couple of years ago. He's on there, but not a whole lot. Not a whole lot.
They're hoping Zay Flowers, who was a high pick in the NFL draft, is going to be an impact receiver. He was a BC kid.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, a couple of years from now, we could be talking about Frelick and Sheehan being the headliners from the baseball program there at Boston College.
Let me ask one more fun question. Okay, so as I said, I went to Providence. And this is one of my favorite trivia questions. It's kind of a trick question. And the question is, who was named Big East Athlete of the Decade for the 1980s? And when I ask this question, people always say, oh, Patrick Ewing, right? Or Chris Mullin or somebody like that. The hook of the question is it wasn't a basketball player. It was a baseball player. And he played for both my favorite team and your favorite team. And he was an MVP award winner one season. You might want to forget he was on your team. I don't think he had a lot of great moments with the Mets.
I don't know it. I was going to say like Frank Viola or something because I know he pitched for the.
He went to St. John's, yeah. It wasn't Viola. It was actually Mo Vaughn, Seton Hall.
Okay. All right. No, I got. He played for Seton Hall, right?
Yes, he did. That's right. And he was a he was a monster. He was just a home run machine. And probably, I think that 1995 MVP probably belongs to Albert Bell. But Vaughn got a lot of – I know Jerry Callahan wrote a Sports Illustrated story that year about Mo Valuable, and Mo got a lot of credit for – and I actually covered Mo Vaughn a little bit. I was a pseudo Pawtucket Red Sox beat writer for a couple of years, and Mo was very approachable, good guy. He never said anything all that interesting, but you could always talk to him no matter how well he played. He was a good guy with the media, which, hey, a lot of guys aren't, so I appreciate that Mo was always cool. I still think Albert Bell was the best player in the American League in 1995. And, Albert Bell, Kenny Lofton, I think they have, like, the possible Hall of Fame arguments. Nobody's going to make it for Bell. I don't think Lofton's ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad. I mean, Albert Bell was just kind of a jerk, so that explains a lot.
When you think about it, you think about that Cleveland team, right? Bell's not getting in. It looks like Lofton's not getting in for other reasons. Manny Ramirez won't get in.
Yeah.
That lineup they had, Jim Tomei was on that team. Richie Sexton at one point was on that team. Baerga, then Roberto Alomar. And
so that's, talented.
That's one of my favorite. You think of like the great teams that people always talk about, the Buffalo Bills with the four straight Super Bowls, and they never get over the hump. That Cleveland team, is. You look at the roster, you think they have to win a World Series some year. And for some reason, they never could. But I loved that team. And then
Charlie Manuel was the hitting coach.
He was, yeah. And then, people wanted to hire DJ Short, but Charlie Manuel's who they went with. And also, remember, that team became relevant right around when Jacobs Field, I forget what they call it now, but Jacobs Field.
Progressive Field now.
Right, because everybody hated the old stadium, right? So Jacobs Field was one of those, right after Camden Yards, where the new wave of the stadiums that combined the great new architecture with the old school features.
Yep.
I've still never been to that park, by the way, which is a pretty
embarrassing. I rode by it.
Okay.
I rode by it last week. It was right where my hotel was for the FSGA conference. And it's too bad they were on the road. I would have loved to have gone to a game there. But no, that Cleveland team in the 90s was something else.
We're still overdue to do a ballpark draft. I don't think we've done that yet.
Let's do it. We'll have to put that in the hopper at some point. But Scott, enjoy your vacation. We'll see you back here when you return. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review. Also, follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone. We will see you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.